ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey there, Background Briefing listeners. I'm Erin Park, host of the new ABC podcast series, Expanse, Nowhere Man. It's 1999 and a young man has deliberately walked into the desert on some sort of a mysterious spiritual quest. He's been missing a month and most people think he's dead, but can an American search team save the day? From cigar-smoking searchers to booty-wearing bloodhounds, this story just keeps getting stranger.
This looks like a cartoon.
Search Expanse on the ABC Listen app.
The Background Briefing team are working hard on fresh episodes. In the meantime, we've collaborated with ABC Long Reads to bring you some of the best pieces of journalism read by the people who've written them.
My name is Gina Rushton and I'm the ABC's analysis editor. I wrote a piece about Australia's push for housing abundance called The Fight Over Your Backyard, Why NIMBY Has Become a Dirty Word. And I discovered a growing number of people are now saying, yes, in my backyard. On a cold winter's night in Sydney's eastern suburbs, dozens of residents, most insulated by navy puffer coats and vests, have piled into the Double Bay Bowling Club to air their concerns at a housing forum. They're not happy that apartments are going up in their suburbs, some of Sydney's most affluent. They're concerned more people will clog the roads and strain infrastructure, especially in an area without a decent supermarket. They're nervous a six-story monstrosity will block their sunlight. They're anxious the runoff from construction into the harbour will impact their children, who enjoy sailing. They want legal recourse. They're angry existing homeowners are being blamed for the housing crisis when the government is allowing migration. We should move out and accept higher density and unlivable suburbs, one woman asks into the microphone. Well, excuse me, it's not our fault. This small gathering of homeowners and politicians is just one of the many local fronts of resistance to the Albanese government's plan to deliver 1.2 million homes across the country by June 2029. The Prime Minister recently conceded it is too hard to build housing in Australia and promised to cut red tape to help boost supply. While many are saying no to development in their suburbs, there is a growing appetite for housing abundance helped by Australia's blossoming Yes in My Backyard movement. YIMBYs want denser cities, they want more housing in places where people want to work and live, and they want them built yesterday. While rolling back regulations and boosting construction isn't usually associated with those on the left of politics, support for a liberalism that builds is gathering momentum globally. It has been helped by the popularity of Ezra Klein and Derek Thompson's book Abundance, in which the authors attempt to reorient progressive politics around the provocation, can we solve our problems with supply? Competition Minister Andrew Leigh has quoted it. Treasurer Jim Chalmers keeps mentioning it. And Productivity Commission head Danielle Wood even claims she read it before it was cool. So popular is the book in Australia's political capital that two Canberra bookstores told the Australian Financial Review they'd sold out. Housing Minister Claire O'Neill says her focus is absolutely on building more homes. It's been the defining motivation of our Labor government for the last 3 years, not because of a New York Times bestseller, but because we're working to correct a 40-year failure of governments to build enough of them. She says so many of the housing issues people face are solved by improving our ability to build more homes at scale. In New South Wales, the government is attempting to build some 112,000 new homes by overriding council restrictions to allow denser housing near public transport. Just three of the 171 centres the Minns government is targeting are located in Sydney's east, where the housing forum in Double Bay is heating up. Local state member, Liberal Kelly Sloan, who is hosting the forum, asks how many people have been door-knocked by a real estate agent. And a sea of hands go up. One woman, who lives on Rose Bay's Wilberforce Avenue, where 12 owners are asking for $165 million from developers, says real estate agents won't leave her alone. I'm very scared that I'm going to be forced out of my home, she says. A house up the road from her that couldn't get a nibble at $8 million sold earlier this year for $16 million. In the 1.6 square kilometres that incorporate these inner eastern suburbs of Edgecliff, Double Bay and Darling Point, population density has remained more or less stagnant for a decade. Up goes another puffy navy sleeve with a question. Tom, an Edgecliff resident, says there's been a lot of fair comments about the need for infrastructure to support more housing, but suggests the community could reflect on its history of opposing any infrastructure development. Woollahra residents objected to a train station, chasing an injunction all the way to the High Court, and also opposed a plan to turn a derelict service station into a Woolworths and apartment block. People in the front rows turn around to take a better squeeze at the questioner. Sloane identifies Tom as a member of Yimby Sydney and thanks him for coming, but maintains the train station was a bad idea. Australia's most beloved, if fictional, NIMBY, the castle's protagonist Daryl Kerrigan, reminds us of a time when the arguments for and against development were simpler. Humble homeowners taking on greedy developers, or environmentalists just trying to save the trees. But Australia's sprawling Yes in My Backyard movement is gaining political power amid a national housing crisis, when a mortgage or even affordable rent has become further out of reach. Earlier this year, the average house price in Australia surpassed $1 million. If you've been lucky enough to overcome the average savings period for a deposit that now often extends beyond a decade, it now takes half of median household income to service a new mortgage. Meanwhile, low rental vacancy rates means people are climbing over each other for the luxury of forking out 33% of median household income to cover a new lease. Affordable rent, attainable mortgages, and the ability to live closer to work, family, and schools? Tell him he's dreaming. In Queensland, there's historically been suspicion of development, says Travis Jordan of Yimby Group Greater Brisbane. He reckons the state's planning, environment, and heritage laws that were shaped in the 1990s was somewhat of a reaction to a period of questionable, and in some cases outright corrupt, relationships between politicians and developers. It was a time when the concerns of communities and local councils were dismissed in favour of demolition and rezoning. Premier Joe Bjelke-Petersen famously disregarded Brisbane's heritage. His connections with the White Shoe Brigade of property developers and the midnight destruction of iconic Brisbane landmarks at the hands of the infamous Dean brothers loom large in the memories of Queenslanders. NIMBYs tend to be homeowners, and homeowners tend to be older. Brisbane YIMBY Travis Jordan sees a generation who went from fighting for green bans in the 80s and 90s to now campaigning to save our suburbs. And he says the people fighting upzoning are stuck in the 90s and they want their neighbourhoods to be stuck there too. He says opponents of density are contributing to a situation in which many people face a choice between renting in barely habitable character homes with poor energy ratings or getting into the property market hours from their workplace and family. He says in Brisbane, it's hard to look at the townhouse ban or how widespread our character housing protections are and think we've got the balance right, and that Queensland's frequent flooding has left whole neighbourhoods unlivable and people are accepting harder trade-offs. He tells me, for a lot of people in Brisbane, especially renters and older people, the climate crisis is a housing crisis. New housing is often opposed on grounds of preserving something, whether it's heritage, privacy, or as one local mayor at Sydney's Double Bay Housing Forum described, the ill-defined and apparently static character of the community. But for many conservationists, increasing density in cities and stopping the creep of low-density residential development over large areas of land is crucial to preserving something else – biodiversity. A 2023 report from the Queensland Conservation Council found that urban sprawl was fast-tracking the extinction crisis in the state. The Council's Urban Sustainability Lead, Jen Basham, says urban sprawl is the biggest threat to unique biodiversity and livability, particularly in southeast Queensland, where there is a projected population growth of more than 2 million people by 2046. She says waterways are being impacted, wildlife, such as our beloved koalas, are being killed and displaced, not just by the initial developments, but then the years of infrastructure that has to follow it. Conservationists are supportive of the grassroots Yimby movement, Basham says, and Australia needs to build up, not out. But Yimbys have found a mixed response from Greens politicians. In Perth, the West Australian Greens leader Brad Pettit recently said, "We need to get rid of red tape," and that his colleagues on the West Coast should relinquish inner-city NIMBYism. One of the Sydney Greens councillors who has voted against development, Isabella Antoniou, says even if deregulation led to a greater supply of housing, it wouldn't help affordability. She says we have incentives such as negative gearing and land banking that continue to drive up prices and ensure housing is an investment and not a human right. She believes to deliver genuine affordability, we need targeted interventions such as rent controls, strong inclusionary zoning targets, and the mass building of public housing by governments. She maintains that government intervention is the only way out of this housing crisis, as private housing developers won't fix a system they're benefiting from. We need to ensure we're building homes, not investment portfolios, she says. University of Melbourne's Max Holleran, who wrote the book on YIMBYs, says the movement has come under attack from anti-gentrification progressives who argue these groups are merely social justice shells concealing property interests. Unlike housing activists in decades past, YIMBYs are not prioritising the fight to protect existing public housing stock and push against evictions. They are instead what Holleran calls supply-side believers, who are more preoccupied with building more of everything. While no one at Double Bay's Housing Forum is arguing for more public housing, the question of affordability is raised repeatedly. How would a few luxury apartments in such a posh part of the city even help a generation of people locked out of the property market? YIMBYs are clear it isn't a one-for-one process, but instead a game of musical chairs. The multi-million dollar apartments going up in Sydney's exclusive east aren't immediately helping your average Australian with a piddling house deposit. Instead, wealthy people who can afford them will move out of older stock, and the person who buys that home will move out of theirs, and so forth, speeding up the process of low-quality stock at the back end of the line devaluing or getting redeveloped. Justin Simon, co-founder of YIMBY Sydney, says this is actually really intuitive. New cars start at around $30,000, and you have used cars right down the price spectrum. But when production stopped during COVID-19, those new car customers had to buy used instead, and the price went up dramatically. And he says, the same thing is happening when you don't build new units in Woollahra or on Sydney's North Shore. Those people will buy a terrace in Ashfield instead, gut it and turn it into a luxury home. The family they beat at the auction has to move out to Liverpool, and the nurse who was living in Liverpool is now moving to Queensland. He says everyone in this chain would have had a better living situation and a shorter commute if we built one extra unit in the eastern suburbs. How transformative would it be if we built tens of thousands? YIMBYs often point across the ditch to Auckland, where studies of a 2016 reform to allow more townhouses and apartments showed an increase in construction and a decrease in rents. Sydney YIMBY Justin Simon cites 2019 research from the RBA, which found that every 1% increase in housing supply eventually brings prices down by 2.5%. But the notion that addressing supply will help the housing crisis has its critics. ANZ's chief economist has said focusing on new supply alone is unlikely to materially improve affordability, even in the medium term. Australian urban planning academics have instead suggested winding back tax breaks like negative gearing and the capital gains tax discount to reinvest into social housing. But others say unlocking supply hasn't happened fast enough. Despite Labor's housing abundance rhetoric, the Liberal Party's housing spokesperson, Senator Andrew Bragg, isn't impressed and thinks Australia is yet to have a government that fully backs the YIMBY movement. A recent report from the National Housing Supply and Affordability Council found Australia is already likely to miss its target by about 262,000 homes. Senator Andrew Bragg told me that, ultimately, the numbers aren't moving. He says one of the reasons is because too many developments are still being kiboshed, and that a lot of the agencies, including federal agencies, have not been effective in actually getting houses or supporting the development of housing. YIMBY Melbourne's Jonathan O'Brien says it can be easy to focus on the headline-grabbing behaviour of not-in-my-backyard councillors, but that behind these councillors are teams of professional planners. New analysis by Yimby Melbourne claims the number of planners Australia-wide has increased dramatically over the past three decades, while key productivity outcomes, including the number of home completions, have only worsened. O'Brien told me he's been to planning meetings where there have been over 40 rejections for a single subdivision, and that Yimby Melbourne members have been the only people speaking in favour of the proposal. And he says there's not a shortage of planners, but an excess of planning. Yimby Melbourne's analysis found there are almost nine times as many planners today as there were in 1986. For every planner in 1986, we built more than 50 homes. We now build fewer than 10 homes per planner. The organiser for Canberra's Yimby Group, Howard McLean, says Yimbys across the country are not just fighting for more apartments, but for what they call the missing middle, a gentle density between the urban sprawl of freestanding single-family dwellings and townhouses, terrace homes, low-rise apartments and multi-occupancy blocks near public transport. Max Holleran, that Melbourne academic who wrote the book on Yimbys, says NIMBY has become a dirty word, not just for its parochialism, but for its anti-urbanism, as it resists density and transport in favour of the white picket fence single-family home streets of suburbia. The Yimby movement was founded in San Francisco in 2013 by maths teacher Sonia Trouse. Holleran writes Trouse began showing up to zoning and council meetings where she found even modest two- or three-storey apartment buildings under review were opposed for problems such as casting shadows. Today's Yimbys will tell you the people who would benefit from increased housing stock aren't turning up to council meetings or housing forums like the one in Double Bay. As Yimby Melbourne's O'Brien puts it, we are the voice of the most important stakeholder, which is the people who want to live somewhere but can't. Yimby Sydney's Justin Simon says, politicians and planners are used to dealing with a very narrow, very noisy class of people who like to say no, which skews their perceptions of what a community will allow. But while stereotypes about who wants Australia to build more, namely only developers, aren't sticking to Yimbys, those rallying to oppose development are also challenging the idea that NIMBYs are just grouchy, heritage-obsessed cranks. Earlier this year, dozens of residents and kids in football jerseys gathered in Sydney's inner west. They were there to protest a planning proposal to build 200 apartments on industrial land next to where Leichhardt's football club trains. Although many of those gathered admitted to the ABC they didn't live in the suburb, they didn't look like your typical NIMBYs. They were young families concerned a new apartment block would force their kids' football club to adjust training hours to avoid noise complaints. They weren't thinking about housing density or affordability. Their concerns were about a potential disruption to their own lives. The club's president and the face of the campaign, Tony Rossidi, insists he's all for housing density. "We'd love to see skyscrapers here," he told me, gesturing to the suburb's empty skyline. "Love it, no problem." But then came the caveat. Not here.